Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Don't be surprised if I ask what a bag is.
Welcome back to another episode of the Gold Diggers podcast. New things around here. New studio. New format. Same faces though. I'm your host today, Beatrice, and I'm here in the studio with
Joyce, Swifty Stones on Twitter.
Lauren at Lauren Coys.
Ella at LOCLs.
Alright, let's start with Justin Potter. Sat. Well, It was coming, we think. You know, Chelsea fans have been crying for this. I can't imagine what they're feeling right now. I'm sure, you know, they're all celebrating in their various homes. What do you guys think of the sacking? Do you think it was deserved?
Yeah, but I'm gutted. I was enjoying Chelsea's downfall. It made me feel better about my team. but if we're being real, their form has not been good. I think it's, what, like 7 wins in like 22 games. Yeah. It was never going to last, but I'm gutted. I can't lie. Especially before we play them as well.
That new,
manager is going to eat you. It's just like, yeah.
I think that who's taking over?
What, interim coach is one of Potter's boys, probably, I think.
I mean, yeah. Do we expect much to change? I can't imagine Chelsea suddenly like bouncing
like,
back.
We didn't even know what Potter's game plan was. Exactly. I don't know what he's been telling his boys.
Like, it's not going to change really until a new manager comes
Chelsea
in.
Currently sit 11th. I mean, I can't imagine that changing. Like, for the rest of the season, where they're technically going to go, I can't see it. It's going to be 10th in and around 10th, there.
Considering they're basically kissing with the relegation boys. Your days are numbered. Mm. Mayday, mayday. That's what I'm saying.
I think it's tough because I think everyone's kind of been waiting for it. But it feels kind of strange, like, oh, this happened to be the result, you know, losing to Villa at home, but they're just like, enough is enough.
This is what I was saying earlier to you. Yeah. Like, what was Chelsea's tolerance gauge where they realised, you know what, this is too much. We had a few shocking performances, and fair enough, the big six sort of games where, you know, you're supposed to be fighting out and you're not necessarily expecting a win, but you're expecting Chelsea to put on a good performance.
Yeah.
Which game did they finally decide that, yo, maybe we should, you know, not take Potter on? Considering we used to get statements from Chelsea themselves going, you know, we're still backing this boy, we're still backing this boy. He said, nah, McGinn scoring? Never!
You know what I think it is? I think it might be the Champions League. I think it might be Real Madrid. They're looking and thinking, they're probably not anyway, but maybe they think our best bet is making a change.
Yeah, they're protecting the brand.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's probably the case that they wanted to back him, but the results over the last few weeks just didn't allow it. I feel like they would have gone all the way till the end if he did have like moments where he was producing good results, but just he was producing nothing. So that kind of forced it out of their hands to actually be like, okay, it's time for him to go. We need to actually end the season. Maybe also the players weren't happy.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a big factor, because if the players are unhappy in the dressing room, then, I mean, as a manager, if you've lost the dressing room, then there's no point in you being there anymore. So I think that might have been.
I agree. And I think the fans as well. Like, they were angry. And I think there's only so much that you can kind of cover that up. And I said this before, I just think Potter's the wrong it's the right coach but the wrong club. He didn't get the time because of Chelsea's and the culture of how they kind of bring in a manager, and then a manager can have success really quickly, and then it goes downhill a little bit, and then they get sacked. I just don't think Potter was the right person, even though he's a great coach, to go to a club like Chelsea, because their standards are so high. Other Chelsea managers have been sacked for far less than the run of form that they were in. So I also think it's just a combination of, losing the players, losing the fans, and then the impact on the brand. And you're right, it's Champions League, the way that Chelsea have been playing. And if you go play that football against Real Madrid, you get torn apart. So
going back to that dressing room comment, is it fair to say that have the boys ever really backed Potter ever since like the sudden sacking of Tuchel? Oh, is there an actual fair way of saying that those boys were really ever really playing for Potter after it came out of the blue that, you know, Tuchel wasn't enough for?
Maybe it was after the January transfer window they thought, okay, some new players, because they bought a lot of players.
Exactly.
Yeah, big names, big money. Exactly. You're thinking,
let's see what he can do now he's got some players in. But and they gave him time for that, but it doesn't look like it's going to change. So I think that this is just the time to do it now.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that some of the players that were there when Tuchel got sacked probably didn't back Potter in that way. Mm. However, because they got so many new players that didn't work under Tuchel, and Potter's like a fresh manager, if they're still not happy with that, then that's saying something.
I think also the implication of the other sackings, because I think once other clubs, obviously Brendan Rodgers has been sacked at Leicester, I think once other clubs start sacking their managers, it also then
gives you wings to sort of
and the ones which are open in the market. Yeah. Like for me, I'm so sad because I just feel like Nagelsmann will go to Chelsea now, because that's that's another kind of big club that's going to match his ambitions probably more so than Spurs. And I think if a manager, you know, like that is on the market, the same way I think Spurs sniffing around Tuchel made Bayern kind of pull the trigger and bring him back. I do think the impact of other clubs sacking their manager means that thinking, okay, actually, if we don't make that decision now, we're going to lose out on who we want. Possibly they would have sacked him in the summer, but I think it sped up the decision.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, going back to the managers, Lauren, who do you think will come in as Tottenham manager?
I want to cry. But yeah, I just think, I think
is it going to be Brendan?
Yeah, it's either going to, I think it's going to, yeah, it's going to be Brendan Rodgers or it's going to be Graham Potter. I think those are our two choices.
I feel like
now
Potter is definitely a downgrade, like
we've gone from Antonio Conte, a serial winner, to Graham. Not that my standards are as high as Chelsea, but it just doesn't. I just think it's the vision of Spurs. It's just not clear, the strategy. I don't know what type of club that we're trying to be. Mm. We were project based. We had Poch. He overachieved. Then we went and brought in Mourinho. Then we sacked him. Then we kind of fell from grace and went for Nuno. And then we were okay, we're back again to bring in Conte. And I just think it's not clear. And I think the question mark of Harry Kane and what he wants to do in the summer, I don't see Brendan Rodgers or Potter as big enough appointments to convince him that we have the ambition to go on and compete with the teams around us again. So
I think he should know that the ambition is already
I'm always gonna click on.
Like and obviously in terms of Conte's comment about like the players not really being willing to, you know, play dangerous football, to be willing to play for the club and stuff like that. So I think it does obviously now then go to the identity of Spurs and what it means to be playing for Spurs and what kind of football they're producing, and now trying to find a manager that can align to that. But also, we have to basically find a like-for-like manager there, because if players aren't willing to sort of change and be willing to be ambitious, there's no point of getting a great manager that plays different tactics if they're not willing to kind of go out of their comfort zone and play differently than what they're playing now.
Absolutely. So my back, and I've been on this podcast many times complaining about the mentality of the players. It's shocking. And we shouldn't have managers who are serial winners coming through the club and then just being like, you know what, these lot are not built for success. Like, it's embarrassing. It's at the end of the day, it's embarrassing that we've had two managers who we saw it in All or Nothing with Mourinho. They're calling out the mentality of the players, saying these lot are not built to win.
The time they're sitting there saying they're losers in the press conference. Yeah,
no, it's true. It's embarrassing. And you look and think, I think for me, Nagelsmann would have been a statement of intent to say, do you know what? We're going to change the style of football, but we're also going to bring in somebody that's a big name. Mm. It's kind of that hybrid between a big name, but also somebody that plays the Tottenham way, which I'm not necessarily.
Watch again.
I mean, but that's just going back to the same old. They weren't winners under Poch.
You know what I'll say with Poch? He came close.
He came close.
One game. And you know what? It does remind me a bit of Klopp, where it's kind of Poch went into the club, and despite the fans, despite the problems, he still did well and overachieved. Mm-hmm. And again, he came one game, it was against us. And if he won that game, look at the implications. That it was a bit unfortunate, in my opinion, because Poch did well, and I don't think he gets the credit because he didn't win anything.
Yeah.
But he was a wonderful manager, and I don't know, maybe, and it seems like some of the players want him back, so.
I think they do, but I also think if I thought the board was serious about bringing Poch back, we wouldn't be here discussing who Spurs' next manager would be. He would have signed by now. Yeah.
Also,
he's out of work.
Sorry, I actually don't agree that Poch didn't get the credit he deserved.
I think, because
I'm a United fan, from our perspective, a lot of United fans wanted him, and they were praising him, singing his praises continuously. Mm. So for me, I saw him get praise, but maybe that's just for my fan base.
Maybe it's just the kind of idea that because he didn't win trophies, and trophies is like what you judge a manager on and what you judge success on, that, you know, he's never been in the top bracket, which I get, but he's a fantastic coach, and for what he did for Spurs, what he brought them to a Champions League final, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I will never, in my days, I will never love a manager as much as I love Poch. I have so much respect for him. But because I have so much respect for him, for him to come back into the circus that is the club, you know, at the end of the day, he wasn't backed when he needed backing because he'd overachieved. So we needed a lot of investment. And we have a board that prioritises the infrastructure, prioritise all the brand deals. And Poch needed a squad. He needed just a few players, and he didn't get that. And I'm not convinced that we fixed the issues with recruitment. We fixed the issue with the academy. I'm not convinced we've done all of that work to justify Poch risking his reputation to come back. Even though I think he would get the most patience from fans because we know what he can do and where he brought us. I also know Daniel Levy is so stubborn, and his ego is so large. So I also look and think, I'm not sure if him and the board would say, do you know what, we've made a mistake. These last 3 or 4 years have been a waste of everybody's time. Let's bring that man back. I don't know. But if he did come back, I wouldn't be disappointed. I mean, I would be disappointed because I want Nagelsmann. He's my first choice. But if you ask me, okay, if Nagelsmann's gone and it's a choice between Poch, Brendan Rodgers and Graham Potter, then yeah, I'm picking Poch.
I think there's something about being a football owner and having a big ego, because even the Chelsea owner is the same thing. They should have sacked Potter a lot earlier, but his ego was too big to admit
because he made that choice.
He made a mistake.
And that's where I think it's quite frustrating as a fan, because, you know, we're the biggest, people forget the fans are the biggest stakeholders in the club. You're the current owner of my club, but I was here before you. And it's kind of like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's history. There's history there. And when you feel like your owners or your board is just taking the piss, it's really frustrating. And it's kind of like, well, we can all see it, but because of your ego, you're not going to reverse a mistake that you've made. And I think we don't have enough transparency from boards. Everybody's always complaining about the people that are running their club and the mistakes that they're making, and they're not holding themselves accountable. And it's really frustrating, because it's like, how'd you get rid of them?
Do you think we're too entitled as football fans then, since we're calling, or we're trying to call the shots from, you know, behind our TVs, saying the club should be doing X, Y, and Z,
overseas.
Well, I mean, I think because their priority is money, first of all, before football. Whereas we're football fans invested in just, you know, having an identity in the club in itself
before obviously
raising profits and blah, blah, blah. But you can do both simultaneously whilst going, I fucked up here. I'm going to kind of reverse this wrong.
But there are many clubs that do both well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. City is one of a great example of a really well-run club, obviously, after the takeover and everything else. We've got a board that well and truly knows when, you know, it's time to, you know, chill out a bit, you know.
But the Premier League don't agree, but...
I'll just say it.
What, you're upset about a checkbook or... But Germany is also a really good example of how it works to have obviously a 50-50% sort of share where you've got obviously the board, but you've also got the fans making decisions as well. So
This is what I don't like about FSG. They don't have any love for Liverpool, and that's
the same as we can say the same about Man United.
And it just reflects in some of their decisions. Yeah. It's like if they just gave that extra 30 million out of the love. We wouldn't be in this position. Like,
and our owners are not broke. It's not like they can't afford
this
it.
I think this
is where the frustration comes from, because when you look into who are the owners of your club, who sits on the board, and you see what they do outside, and you're like, oh, look at them on their big yacht, and you can see that. And I think it's really frustrating when it's you've bought my club, but you're now not investing your own money. Now there's debt on my club. So when it comes to sell, somebody else has got to take on that debt. And I think it's very difficult as an outsider to understand that the true financial ins and out, but it just kind of feels a case of, well, you don't care. Like you said, you don't care because you're treating it like it's one of
just
your, a business investment. And for us, it's far more than that. We don't have shares in the club when we're there to watch our team win. And I think the crux of a football club is you are judged upon its success. If you want to be considered in Europe's elite, in the big six, in the Premier League, you are judged by the trophies that you win. And if you're not doing that, and it's continual failure, or you've fallen away from those standards, then I think fans are right when they say, well, move on and give me an owner that will match the ambition.
I mean, because they have such a big ego, they're probably not going to leave anytime soon. But I guess we can just hope.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a recap of the games that happened this weekend. Let's start with Man City and Liverpool. Joyce, what are some of the positives from that match?
Everything. There were so many positives. So many positives. You know how I was talking about this man that lacks follicles on his head? I'm sorry. Because you know what, he deserves so much more respect, especially the tactics he's played. I know he played an absolute hell of a game when we played at Anfield, and I don't think it was so confusing to watch with all these overloads, especially on the left wing. But I think it predominantly was more to do with Klopp's lack of tactics. If we're talking about the 4-4-2-4, we had Henderson and who else?
Elliot.
Yeah, Elliot as well. And Fabinho. But specifically Henderson and Fabinho. These people are old.
Yep.
You're making these two people try and cover so much space in the middle where you're holding a lot of our progressive play, obviously, in the middle and whatnot, and getting these people to try and stretch and cover more players than they really realistically ever should. And it worked in our favour. All that progressive overload in the middle, being able to play onto the wings. Great. Lovely. Mr. Jack Grealish. Mr. Grealish. You made me so happy this weekend, you know? Like, genuinely speaking, it's so nice to see him now kind of come out of his shell. And you're seeing the kind of spark we saw in him when he was playing at Aston Villa. And it's so nice to see him have like the freedom and creativity to play on that wing and then cut into the middle.
That's a City player now.
Literally. Exactly.
It always takes like a year.
That's what I'm saying. That people are not listening.
Yeah, but
when I was backing my boy,
when you cost 100 million,
your expectations are high. I understand. It's instant, but I've always said this with Pep signing, you need to give them a season or two, because it takes time to obviously adapt to the philosophy of whatever else. And you're talking about a player that's gone from Aston Villa to City.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen overnight. Yeah. It's a massive. He was the main man at Aston Villa, he isn't over here at City, mm. and that's just the way it
and
is.
Like everything went through Grealish at Aston Villa. So
yeah, it was just give it to him and let him run with mm-hmm. it. And I think, you know, take the ball, pass the ball, that kind of type of style that Pep has. I mean, Villa just wouldn't have had the quality to play in that way. But yeah, I'm looking at him now and I'm thinking, yeah, okay. I actually think he's gone up a level than what we were seeing in a Villa shirt. And you look and think he's one of the first names on the team sheet. And, you know, 6 months ago, we were laughing at him. So, yeah. like, he really... No,
and the thing is, Joy supported him.
Yeah, no, yeah. You can say it. I back the vision. Same way I back my boy Stones. And let me say now, because I haven't ever gone on a rant about Stones here, but there's a reason why I'm called Swifty Stones, my dog. I invested when the stocks were low, -50. When people are asking, what the hell is a guy like Pep Guardiola doing poaching a guy from Everton? We've seen what he can do. And to be quite honest, I may have raised an eyebrow when I saw him being played in midfield, but he played so smoothly. The defensive midfielder at that, but he acted as basically an extra person and it helped so much with the transition into the front as well. And genuinely, I think it genuinely adds to a testament of what Pep can do and how great of a manager he is, because I don't think many people expected it.
He is a great coach, because some of the players that you bring in, I always think, like, why
are
they
there?
Even Ake.
The first thing I thought was Ake.
Why? He's so average.
Ake's had a really good season.
Yeah, he has been really good.
The only person on watch at the moment is my boy Phillips. I'm so sorry, but... ever since we bought him from Leeds, I've always really questioned that. But, you know...
He needs to run a game, though.
He genuinely does. Is what it is, really. But, I don't know what else to say. I want to laugh in the face, man. I quite like it. It was so nice to see. And I think the game as well said a lot about the degradation of Liverpool Football Club, well and truly. I think we've seen it time and time again, obviously 7-0 loss and whatnot, 4-1 now. But
I felt like their win against United, that 7-0 win, gave them like this boost of confidence and it made them think that they were better than what they were.
It was an out of body experience based on
I promise you, we've been doing this all season. We have had, remember, we won 9-0 against Bournemouth,
you did.
And then we lose the next week against someone. It's just been the whole season, it's been like this. We've had highs and then we haven't been able to carry that on. And it's just, this team just lacks shame, in my opinion. They honestly do, because
you've come from the pits of hell to praise the team.
But you guys know I love this team. I know I've backed this team the whole year. I've fought for them, all of them. I've been a great fan. I've been a wonderful fan.
You were even quite confident before the game.
For real. Honestly, every time. I've fought more for Liverpool than they have fought this season. For real. And the reason why I say I think they're lacking shame is because you look at results, Man United early in the season away, Napoli away, Nottingham Forest away, and you think, as a team, sit down and think, this cannot happen again. Let's not have games like this again. The game yesterday was a spitting image of Real Madrid at home at Anfield a couple of weeks ago. We go ahead, and to be honest, I don't think most people expected us to go ahead. I didn't expect us to go ahead. Wonderful finish by Mo Salah, by the way, the only positive of the game.
That's what I'm saying, though. You kind of hold on to this crux of, like, this weird gimmick of having players like Salah, having Nunes and whatever, and they obviously do produce what they need to, but there's no substance to it anymore. You've got, because when you have the three musketeers at the back, even four, because I'm not letting Konate get away with this
we
as
don't
well.
Have a, but we don't have a team. Like, the forwards have been the only positive this season for Liverpool, and they haven't been great, they've been good, they've been solid. But the midfield and defence have let us down week after week.
I remember when, like, Van Dijk was out injured, like, basically, you know, you didn't have the full back four and everybody was like, oh, wait till they all come back and they start defending. No. And I'm thinking, now the defence is
oh my God, what happened to Virgil?
Virgil, like, wow.
I want to talk about Virgil. Okay. So, the first goal that City scored, Robertson is out of the game. And as a defender, as Virgil van Dijk, you cannot, how long has Mahrez been in this league? How long has Van Dijk been in this league? Do not let Riyad Mahrez come inside the play, especially when you're out of position. He had to make that tackle. And again, it's just that relaxed,
lackluster. You're not on Vogue magazine. You're here to kick balls.
Even Grealish in when he had to track back and make that tackle. Grealish make him.
Liverpool players are not doing that this season, and that is the difference.
Someone tweeted, "How come Van Dijk always has his hair intact after every game?" That just made me think. Like, surely it means he's not doing the work. Because if you're throwing in slide tackles, doing everything you need to do, there's no way.
I mean, if we go back 17-18 to 19-20, Virgil was unbelievable. Then his assault, Pickford's assault against him. No, it was a full on assault. That again,
no, it's true that it was bad.
That VAR again.
Liverpool fans should get over it.
No, I cannot get over it. I can't get over it.
The thing is, he's not been the same player. Like he's really struggling.
Pickford robbed me of 1 year of prime Virgil van Dijk and contributed to his downfall. So when England play France, do you know how happy I was to see that Pickford couldn't reach that ball? I do not like that guy. I do not like him. I'm always going to have him. But anyway. And then when he came back last year and he played nearly every game, especially with an injury like that.
Yeah, he's mashed
up. He said his body broke down. Like, listen to the man. We needed someone. And especially this summer, I think we need two centre-backs. We needed someone to make sure that Virgil didn't have the demand physically that he had before, because he just won't be the same player. And this season, we're kind of seeing that he's just, to be honest, I think it's more mentally than physically. The defenders, all of our defenders are just not engaging. They're not being aggressive enough. There were points in that first half, because I think the first half wasn't actually too bad by Liverpool, apart from the goal and some other instances. I think we actually counter-attacked City pretty well. I think slightly before the goal, we should have been 2-0 up, but Salah didn't get his pass because Grealish intervened.
I mean, it was
a minute apart.
And that's not the first time we've seen Grealish track all the way back.
Yeah. And that's the thing, though. It's a sole responsibility of actually playing. It's playing for your shirt, well and truly. It's playing for the badge. It's not just the responsibility of the defenders to obviously do what they have to do, but I think it's also, it does come to a point of great management as well. Pep has made sure that like all these players are now basically playing out of position. They're sort of used to having to play roles that they obviously typically wouldn't. But you've got to cover for your man. You're going to have games where players aren't obviously at the brightest. And I will say Akanji was fairly poor. And to be quite honest, it's okay to sort of have a really bad game and whatnot. But it does mean that as a club and as a team, you've got to step up for whenever there's sort of, I'm looking for the word. I can't find the word right now. But it's a case of just not being able to kind of have the people that you want playing the game that you want, sort of thing. Mm. So what I'm saying really is Liverpool. Your days are numbered. Your days are numbered.
I do feel sorry for Klopp, though, because I feel like with this Liverpool team, it doesn't matter what combination of midfield is playing. There's no midfield there. It doesn't matter which one.
The only thing that maybe he can do is change the formation or something. But again, we've tried that.
You know what? And the worst thing is, whilst we were dominating over you, you decided to sub in Milner. I think it feels like a slap in the face.
I haven't even got into the second half. I haven't even written to them for the second half, because you go in 1-1.
Yeah, obviously it's all to play. All to play for.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, last year we were against City. City completely dominated us. I remember in that first half, and we were lucky to come in 2-1, I think, and then we fought like dogs and got the draw. And that's the difference. That's what we miss. That's the Liverpool I miss, because they could suffer. This team cannot suffer. And to come out in the second half and concede after 1 minute, I mean, what kind of...
You're still in the dressing room, mentally, still in the dressing room.
And it's not even a... this is what I'm saying. It's not even a physical thing, because they were sitting in the dressing room for 15 minutes, drinking water, doing whatever. Yeah. I don't know what they're doing in the dressing room. And they come out and it's like, what? It's like 1-1, you played well, you started well in the first half, try and repeat that. You've got something to hold on to. And they throw it away within 3 or 4 minutes. And I said, it's exactly the same as Real Madrid. It's exactly the same of what we did. And it's like 53 minutes heads down. and they thought the game was over. And I'm thinking, is this a Jurgen Klopp team? Since when do you have your head down? Because theoretically,
we're used to Liverpool fighting.
Until the whistle's done, the game's not over.
Exactly. Yeah. And theoretically, we were 2-0 down, if you think about it. Since when is 52 minutes? You've got, 35 minutes to play. Since when do you have your heads down and you're walking about? And the biggest shame in football is when you feel like the opposition team is just playing with you and they're just passing the ball around and they're just wasting time. It's like pre-season. I couldn't believe it. Like, no one was pressing. There was no tackle. I don't even remember a bit of frustration. There was nothing, no fight. Yeah.
And that was all without Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about my boy Alvarez. Mr. Argentine, I love you. There's nothing, literally, I think he'll never, unfortunately, get the minutes that Haaland will, as long as Haaland remains at City.
Yeah.
And before we get onto the topic of, oh yeah, City play better without Haaland, I think you guys need to stop pitting two bad Bs against each other. It's time. I know what you guys are thinking at home as well.
I'm thinking that City have many league titles before Haaland came. So this idea that, you know, they play better, you know, do they play with, you know, better with or without Haaland? This City team knows how to play without Haaland because he only arrived in August. Yeah, so I know that's that they can play.
You guys have played without a striker, no disrespect to Jesus, for a long time. So you play well that way.
100%. And Alvarez is the perfect false nine business for when you do want to play that kind of how you have been playing, you know, with Jesus being the second striker at City. So I actually think Alvarez, in terms of kind of that typical City that we've seen over the years, actually Alvarez fits that better, but equally Haaland is a goal scorer.
There was a ton of chances during that game that you would have imagined.
You've just got more weapons to your armour. Like, need a goal scorer, Haaland, if you need more link up
players. And a lot of the rest of the teams, we struggle. We only have one person.
Because it's weird, because obviously doing a few seasons without an actual striker, obviously after Aguero left, and then now being able to have two pretty much perfect strikers, you couldn't have asked for a better deal, to be quite honest. And Alvarez cost us 40 million.
And that's one thing I think about City is that we don't, the recruitment
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Spend money, but actually some of the players that you find, or the question marks of the signings, this is why I think City have been dominant for so many years, because they've just got all the departments working in harmony, and then Pep is just Pep is Pep. what can I say?
I have to say this, but you all saw Pep's celebration, right? in front of Tsimikas. Yeah. And I'm not even angry at Pep. I'm angry at Tsimikas.
Yeah, Tsimikas to me. Why didn't he react?
Again, head down. What? React. Move him out the way.
What about Arthur?
It should have been a flare up, you know.
but there's no fight in this team. There's like nothing. Yeah. And I'm thinking, there's too many times this season where I thought, put me on the pitch, and I can't even play. But I'm thinking, I can do more. I can do more here.
I feel like maybe when you guys were fighting for a title race, you had more like fire in you.
Guys are still having to play for top four. What is going on?
But you have to play for your pride as well.
It's not the same.
I get, it's not the same. Like, I remember when we played City last year and we got absolutely dominated that first half. And then Gary Neville was like, yeah, this team are just like dogs. They just stay. And it is true. We just had that mentality that we just, because Suffolk, we could just, in minutes, turn it around. And it's just, we don't have that anymore. This team is mentally fragile now. Mm. Mentality monster to mentally fragile. It's just, yeah.
Well, the title race is still, you know, there.
Still there.
I think City, they're 8 points behind Arsenal at the minute with a game in hand. It's not over. I don't think it's over.
And every game is a must win. We don't. Yeah. There's no. Obviously, it's always been Pep's philosophy: a game at a time. But every game is a must win. And obviously, now what is it? 7 games unbeaten now. 7.
Yeah.
But yeah, that we're unlocking that 10 game run. It's happening.
No, but that's. I think that's why it's not over, because when City can get to that level where it doesn't look like any team can beat them, then you think, well, it's not over. And also that you still need to play each other. So it's kind of a case of, you know, if the gap does get smaller, how does Arsenal respond to that pressure? So I think if it's any other team, even me, the Spurs fan, I would maybe say I think it's done. But because it's City that are hunting and chasing them, I feel like until it's mathematically impossible, the title race is still there.
I think Arsenal still have to go to Anfield, which is going to be a tough game for them. I know Liverpool are not fighting, but
at Anfield, and they have to go to St James's Park.
I'm very confident we'll get something.
So it's like, if Arsenal drop points there, and then have to go face City as well. Mm.
St James's Park they have to go to as well. Mm. So there are still, you know, games tough where you games. Think Arsenal, but every time I think Arsenal are going to drop points, they haven't. But there are still really tough games.
I think
when
out of the two, Arsenal have the tougher run.
Yeah,
games. I've said like. The City Arsenal game will be key. I said whoever's ahead after that, I think we'll win.
We'll win. Yeah.
But I've seen City and how they are experiencing it. Tata races with them. This is City's demon mode. They go into this demon mode where in Tata races just win after win after win after win after win.
I'll take the quiz.
Man, it's broken my heart. It's giving me heartbreak for real. Like, yeah. Let's see. We'll and to all the Arsenal fans that said we're useless, where were you when we needed you in a title race? So hold that for real.
I just looked at the table and Liverpool are on 42 points. Not really chasing United, even though United are sliding down the table slowly. Mm. I mean, I expected you to be higher from, you know, your previous comments, Ella.
Cannot believe after that 7-0, which you said, Real Madrid were ready.
Real Madrid were ready and top four is ours.
I cannot be shamed more than my team is shaming me, for real. And also, the team clearly don't share the same mentality as me, because after the 7-0 win at Man United, you're thinking, okay, it's only what, 7 points? You want to look ahead. You want to think, let's go again. Let's try and chase third, because it's possible. Mm. But this team want to be fairies and do
they're currently 8 points off top four, so it's not mathematically impossible.
It's not, but we have to get going.
Yeah. You've got Newcastle, you've got Chelsea, Brighton around
Chelsea.
The streets
Arsenal.
Are not safe, man. Yeah. The streets are not safe.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's 11 games. Let's see what we can do.
Depending on the next couple of games, but by this time next week, I think we'll know if you're definitely down and out.
Yeah, because we've got Chelsea on Tuesday.
Yeah. With the new manager bounce, I mean, that could
be... Liverpool need to... Because our away form, it's abysmal. Abysmal. I think it's 10 points in 10 games.
Yeah. I won't be surprised if Chelsea take that game.
That will really bring me to my knees. Well. It really would.
Oh, Alright, what other games happened this weekend? I'm dreading.
Beatrice.
So, Newcastle, Man United. Newcastle beat United 2-0. Newcastle have really great defensive record. I mean, it's just generally very difficult to get goals past them. And once again, United struggled to get goals away. I mean, I wouldn't even say goals.
I said shots.
Okay, let's be more specific and say some shots. I don't think United have scored in the last 3 or 4 away games, so they are really struggling away at the moment. Just generally, away form is quite poor, similar to Liverpool. I mean, I don't really have much to say on this, so you guys can kind of like take the floor on this.
The Rashford gimmick is over. It's over. That purple patch, it's okay. He's allowed to have it, but it's over.
On the Rashford thing, I think he's still injured. I don't think he's fully fit because he just wasn't himself. Mm. And considering that he pulled out of the England squad out of injury, I just don't think it's this injury has healed.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't really in the game, but no one in that United front nine was. I think United were very, very lucky it was not more than two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Newcastle played United off the park. Off the park.
Especially the first half.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I was shocked because I was expecting more from United. Really? I knew it would be a tough
United
game.
Fans
I wasn't
wanted a draw because that is ideally what would have been the best result for us in this instant. Mm. Mm-hmm. Just because our away form is poor and Newcastle just don't let people score. But I think, like you said, they were quite wasteful in the first half. They could have scored so many more goals, but they just weren't, you know, they weren't clinical in that first half. But they did punish us in the second half, and they deserved the win. They honestly deserved the win.
I'm not saying I thought United would win the game, but I was expecting them to at least show some intent trying to win the game. I just think, you know, as good as Newcastle were, I just think that's as bad as United were. It was just a little bit all over the place. I mean, at some point the graphic went up when it was like Nick Pope had like more than double the amount of touches that Weghorst had.
Yeah.
And
honestly, playing with Weghorst is basically playing with 10 men. He literally doesn't contribute anything.
But I also remember the United fans would be like, oh, I like that we brought him in because he's Ten Hag signing and we're listening to him. No player that was contracted to Burnley, out on loan to Besiktas, should have ended up at Manchester United, and he's shown his level.
I agree with that, but I think like managers don't always get it right, and I think in this instance, Ten Hag did get that signing wrong because he adds nothing to the team. Honestly,
no, he doesn't.
But he wasn't getting the funds, was he? Because he wanted Gakpo and all that. But I'm sure.
But surely there was someone else he could have brought on loan.
But I think with the amount of time that we had very limited options.
But yeah, I mean, he was terrible. But I actually think also Ten Hag has to hold shame because considering how terrible that first half was, he didn't make any changes at halftime.
And then the subs that he didn't make didn't make sense.
Yeah, and I actually think tactically he just got it wrong. And he was really slow to react. But yeah, I think Newcastle, going to St James's Park when the fans are in that mood, you know, and the way that Eddie Howe, like, I feel that we speak about Graham Potter a lot and Brendan Rodgers as English managers, but actually Eddie Howe has got that team cooking, and he hasn't even touched the side of the investment that their owners will bring. But he's got, you know, Newcastle have an identity. They press really well. They win the ball back. They're like, you know, Klopp at like Liverpool at their peak in terms of how they actually approach the game. They make it impossible. They suffocate you, and usually, but then I think that's without the likes of Casemiro, it was quite obvious the lack of technical quality in that United team. They just could not get out at all.
How many games is Casemiro missing now?
Two left. Two.
That's interesting because I think Man United's next game is big because they're kind of being dragged into this top four race now.
Yeah, it was meant to be quite safe, but we're dragged into it.
But it's so tight up there now as well.
Yeah.
Have they got a result? Have they won since the 7-0?
In other cup competitions.
But not the league?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah, no. They're
the tree. We're losing the tree.
Maybe the trees are United.
We'll have to do some outtakes.
No, no, just leave it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay. Yeah, yeah. That's okay.
Yeah, I think you kind of touched it a little bit. And it just okay.
Apologies.
Where did we stop?
Yeah, I can't remember what I was saying.
United haven't won.
Yeah, since yeah.
I think the problem with United is they just don't get enough goals because most of the goals come through Rashford.
Yeah.
And I think if Rashford doesn't score, it's kind of like United are probably not going to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, we have other players. Yeah,
what's
like
Antony for?
What
is that Beyblade for?
The thing is with Antony is he does all these tricks and he gets under people's, you know, skin. But the end product is like
Samba football is good.
If he can't cut in and shoot off his head, that's the only trick.
That's it. Yeah. And it's too predictable. It's too easy to defend against. And so he doesn't always offer us much on that side. Martial's slowly creeping back into the team. He can offer a little bit more than Weghorst. Absolutely.
Until he gets injured again, and that's Martial's biggest problem.
I mean, and the rate of games that we have still yet to play, it's a bit worrying because we need those goals, and our players are kind of like all over the place. They're fatigued, like we're not getting any rest, and this is how it's going to be till the end of the season. So all we can do right now is kind of hold on to get that top four spot. But I think Newcastle are definitely in the running now. Like, everyone was saying that they're out of it a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, because they went through that patch where they weren't scoring.
They weren't scoring any goals. But they look up for it now. They look like they're fighting for something, and they look great. So I think, especially for Spurs, Newcastle will be a worry.
Yeah. I'm so fed up with Spurs. Like, everyone, like, you know, everyone's like, top four. What business do we have being in the Champions League when you can't score a goal in the knockout rounds? But obviously, if we're going to keep the likes of Kane or we want to attract a good manager, okay, we're competing for top four. But when I look at Spurs and given our injuries that we do have, you know, we're down to three midfielders, and we have been since Bentancur and Bissouma both got injured. Ben Davies is injured now. Our defence is paper thin. And as we have seen with Conte, we know that the mentality of the players is not there. You know, I look and think tomorrow, obviously, we're playing Everton. If we win, you can go third. Will we win? I don't know. It's a massive game for Everton. And this
is... I was going to say, for Marva, Everton need to win it. I can't lie.
Yeah,
I don't need to see my goal upset anymore. Yeah.
But this is the problem that I have is I don't know. Like, I don't know if my team will turn up.
If you don't win against Everton, then you're actually being dragged into a top six race because Brighton.
Yeah,
are on
this
the
is
up.
The thing. But I've said,
they've
guys,
got, they've
said
got
in the
they've
group,
got four games in hand as well.
Yeah, they've got. Yeah, a lot
I said
of,
in the group chat, watch Spurs tumble down the table. I wasn't joking. Like, the way that we're playing and the way that we approach games, and now we ain't got no manager. We got our director of football has been banned by FIFA. Now he's taking a leave of absence because again, the club doesn't have shame. From the moment that whole Juventus thing came out, the directors at Juventus that were still there resigned in November. We kept Paratici and that man has still been working. Even when the ban was upgraded, we were like, oh, we're shocked. How's everybody shocked? Everybody knew that thing was coming. But apparently at Spurs, we were shocked. And then they saw the reaction on social media and like, oh, we're going to have to do something. So now the man is gone. We've got zero strategy. So the whole club is a mess. So I'm not sure if Champions League football is going to aid us because we do not have a squad that is capable of playing at a high level of football midweek and at the weekend.
What about at Europa League? Just let's just say you get.
I think Europa League fine because maybe you can rotate a little bit. You don't have to play your strongest 11 in the Europa League. But equally, I'm kind of...
Maybe just sit out. Maybe just enjoy
play proper football first. I would rather sit out because I just think I'm tired of our owners, especially, and Daniel Levy. And also the players, when they come out with the interviews, turning top four or European football into a trophy. It's not a trophy. It's just your league position. And maybe, you know, the financial implications and the way that we're run as a club and being financially sustainable, like that European prize money is really important to us. But equally, if you can't hear, you must feel. So I would, if we could do a season out of Europe, I think that would be the best for us. But a season out of Europe, we're losing Harry Kane. So yeah, it's kind of
that
like...
That means you're sliding to what position on the table? That's all
yeah,
the way
I think,
down.
Yeah, I feel like that's
Brighton
are there,
Brentford are there. Yeah, Fulham.
Fulham lost.
Yeah, but yeah, like they're about.
Liverpool in top six as well.
Yeah, so it's very possible. Yeah. I think from United all the way down to kind of eighth or ninth, it's very it's very possible to be flip flopping in those positions.
About 9 points to.
I mean, Newcastle and United will be favourites. I think
never know,
either
maybe,
will be extremely. I think both will be extremely disappointed if they don't make it. I'd love it if Man United don't make it. Imagine.
That's not talk about that.
Can you imagine Liverpool in the Man United? Sorry, but
that means you have to win the Europa League.
I still. Oh yeah,
that's true.
You'd be laughing at the day with Europa League.
Mourinho's
and then there anyway.
It's Mourinho, isn't it? Roma.
Yeah.
He's got.
Yeah, I think it would be Newcastle and United to take those two spots.
I'm still talking about Liverpool. Can you believe it? I'm still going about Liverpool.
Yeah, what about Chelsea, man? What about Chelsea, man?
Let them
fight a little.
Because
maybe Chelsea could finish in the top half. No. Sorry, Bree. Don't move that long.
Yeah, 10th spot. No, I can't see Liverpool doing it. Honestly, I think Newcastle, this is their time. I want to see them in the Champions League. I think that would be quite different.
I blame Klopp. He's just ingrained this. He's just injected this belief in me, even when we're down. It's just...
Blame Klopp or the board now. Are you...
No.
Would you be okay?
Blame Klopp in a good way in terms of he's instilled
belief
in me.
She's saying the reason for her confidence.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Because
I was going to say.
Yeah.
However, he might disappoint you this season.
He might, but he doesn't often... That's the thing. Even in 2021, where we lost six home games in a row, it didn't look like we were going to make top four. We finished third. So I don't know.
A nice spell towards the end.
Yeah, and that, to be honest, I think it's looking very unlikely. But if we can pull 5-6 wins together, that is optimistic. But I think we can do it, but let's see.
Question is, would you be willing to let Klopp go at the end of the season?
Everyone before Klopp.
Anfield, I told you, everyone before Klopp.
Okay. I think I get it, because I think it's almost like Poch with Spurs, because you've seen the vision and you know that the way of the style of football, and you know it works, especially from a Liverpool perspective in terms of actual success. Mm-hmm. It's more of a case of, we just need players that can play in that way, in that system, because the system has been proven to work. So I get that.
It's like Liverpool 16-17, where he has this squad of players, we know they're not quite good enough, and he needs to rebuild. And we've seen what he can do when he gets the right players in. It's just, he needs to be better.
But sometimes even the best of managers lose that spot. They lose it.
But Beatrice, this man has changed my life. Like, literally. Like, Brendan Rodgers absolutely broke my heart. I wasn't always this optimistic fan, you know. He broke my heart, Brendan Rodgers. And then Jurgen Klopp came in, won everything, and made me see things I didn't think I'd ever see as a Liverpool fan. Like, won a league title. I know it was during COVID, but still, that was kind of just the aim for Liverpool fans, that league title. But for him to win everything... Nah, Klopp's my guy. Everyone's getting before him.
I respect it. I hope you're not heartbroken again, but
we'll just
have to see. What other games happened this weekend? Chelsea lost to Aston Villa. I mean, I can't say I was surprised about that.
No. Because I think it's going under the radar, but what Unai Emery is doing with that Villa side, he's cooking something, and they have an identity, a structure. Yeah. Tactically, they're spot on. They're in really, really good form, so by no means it was going to be an easy game. But equally, Cucurella, how does that ball bounce off your head like that? That's embarrassing. At this level, what kind of defending was that? I mean, come on. I was embarrassed for him, and I support Spurs. It was awful. Yeah, I mean, but then obviously then McGinn's goal was fantastic. But I don't, you know, Chelsea don't have a goal scorer. And it shows, and it doesn't matter how much possession you have and how many chances you create, if you don't have someone in your team that can consistently put the ball in the back of your net, you're just wasting energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
it's a shame because there's so many names that come to mind when you're thinking about Chelsea, but like none of them are consistent goal scorers. Mm. But you know,
Yeah, that's their problem. And I don't think there's enough leadership in that Chelsea team. I think, you know, when you look at what I get what they're doing as the blueprint as a club, and I get what Bowley's trying to bring in these kind of young players, huge potential. But when that's kind of the crux of what you bring in, all of these players like Mudryk, they're just going to take a really long time to develop. And what you're not, it's not like you're bringing in like a Bellingham or even De Ligt when he was like a young captain at Ajax. Mm-hmm. You're not bringing in the young leaders. You're just bringing in like, you know, these really good, you know, tricks, and they're really good to watch, but they're not carrying teams on their back from the clubs that they've come from. So I just think there's not enough, I think, leadership in terms of, you know, kind of setting the standards and saying this isn't good enough. Mm. And maybe Graham Potter also wasn't that guy to do it, considering, you know, he was relatively happy enough with yesterday's result, because you can say that at Brighton, but you can't say that at Chelsea ultimately. I think they need now in the summer, they might have to go against the grain and bring in some leadership.
There's just no cohesion and consistency, especially in attack, which just makes it difficult, because that's what the great attacks have. They have understanding between each other. And when you have young players like Mudryk come in, it's immediate pressure, because one, because of his price tag, two, because Chelsea
they teethed him from Arsenal.
And three, because the senior players at Chelsea are actually not doing anything. We don't know where Aubameyang is. We don't know what he's doing. We have Havertz, who is good but doesn't score consistently enough. So then the pressure on the young players is already there, and that's not what you want. You want things to progress naturally or evolve naturally. So
you want them to come into a team that already is playing well and then grow within that team.
Exactly.
Not come into a team that is just disorganized and they're having to pick up, you know, so much work. But I mean, a good manager can come into this Chelsea side. They have got talent there. So I think
it's a really attractive squad.
Next season, we're going to expect big things from them, because they have a great, great, great talent in so many of the young players that they do have. What other game has happened? Brighton have been really good.
You guys didn't listen when recently. I said Brighton, I mean, second.
Is it a coincidence that they're even better now that Potter has left?
Oh, 100%. When you start speaking about what Potter lacked at Brighton, that he's also brought over to Chelsea, which is explaining why Brighton couldn't really bang in the goals that now they're banging in, and now De Zerbi's doing something. What is it that De Zerbi has that Potter couldn't bring to Brighton? Because they've been unreal, and I've seen the vision. I saw the vision last season whilst Potter was still there.
And I have to start respecting your vision.
Great takes, man. You guys need to listen. I told you, no Swifty stolen stops. I've been there. But Brighton, I genuinely do really want to see them play European football next season.
Because everything about the club and the way it's run is built
the scouting
around
wise as well. Matoma.
It's a good team. It's not just a manager's impact. Yeah, like so. I think De Zerbi walked into a really good young developing squad, and tactically, he knows what he's doing, and he's got and they're so good to watch. Like it's kind of you always know if Brighton are on TV, you watch it, because you're gonna see good football.
It was really great to watch them, and I hope to see them in Europe next season.
No, they deserve it.
But and yeah, they're so good, because I just, you know, like Matoma and all them lot, man. They're that price tag. If they want, if someone wants to buy them in the summer, it's just where do they find these players? Like when I look at a club like Spurs, you know, I would go and study what they're doing, or go and take some of their recruitment guys and come and bring that, because I just, Brighton are one of the best well-run clubs.
It's very data-driven, similar to what Liverpool do on how they scout players. So players like Caicedo, brilliant buy. They're going to get top money from him as well, and I'm sure they're going to replace him adequately. I just have nightmares of even when we play Brighton. That was one of the worst. Honestly, I fell asleep. For real. They dominated us from beginning to end. They're brilliant to watch, brilliant team.
Let's quickly touch on the relegation battle.
Oh, now. Shout out Philippa, West Ham on today.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I opened up football, but I actually smiled. I was like, it's a shame she's not on.
they're not safe. They won.
Of course not. I mean, it's so tight on the other side of the table.
But she's been struggling. So, you know, she got 3 points today. So, yeah. I mean, it's one for the age. I think, you know, in 10 years' time, we'll be talking about this relegation battle because to almost have half of the league, you know, within the space of 4 or 5 points, it's wild. Like you can win a game and you're second bottom and suddenly you jump up to 14th.
Exactly.
It's crazy. I can't call it in all fairness.
Because even when I was watching Southampton, they play some good stuff. They have some talented players.
It's like, okay, they're not safe. They have seat next door.
But
it's just like, I feel like all of the teams have the potential to go down. All of them have the potential to be safe. So it's,
I mean, Leicester sacked their manager just in time because, you know, this relegation battle is
say just in
up.
Time, but the manager that comes in now, they're going to have the whole world and a half on their shoulders.
But there's talent in that Leicester team.
Yeah, there's talent in Leicester team. And we've seen it work where teams are in the relegation battle, get rid of the manager, and they stay safe. We've seen it happen. Mm. So, I mean, Leicester could be safe by the end of the season. We don't know. Mm-hmm.
Crystal Palace are safer.
They're not safe.
I mean, they
finally got their first win.
Out of everyone else, they're the safest.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes, you know, as a big thick club, I just look at them and I'm like, which players would I like to cherry pick? And those are the ones where I want their value to be driven down if they get relegated. But yeah, it's interesting because you look at somebody like a Nottingham Forest. And obviously they haven't pulled the trigger with Steve Cooper and they've kept him, but everybody else has kind of changed their manager. You know, will it pay off?
But I think that's also because Nottingham Forest just has, I think they have so much to lose, obviously, with the investment that they put on as soon as they got promoted. I feel like it'd be really, really rash now to just say, you know what, thanks for bringing us up. We're going to have to let it go. Yeah. There's so much money that they've put into all these players.
They can't afford to
get relegated. They can't afford to get relegated. Because they won't be able to afford half the players.
Yeah,
can't do that.
But
I think right now, so the ones that are at the bottom are Everton, Leicester, and Southampton. Like, I think Southampton, honestly, it's their time to go.
I think it's their time, but equally, I mean, Conte's press conference was after the Southampton game. They do show resiliency and they show there's a spirit and determination that even if they're losing, they can push and come back. I mean, they lost to West Ham today, but like, you know, West Ham scored off a set piece. They Southampton could have got something from that game.
They beat Chelsea away.
Exactly, they went to Old Trafford, got a point. Mm. Yeah, so
it's hard to call.
Yeah,
Bournemouth are sitting at 16, but I think my spirit is telling me they're going down.
I would say Bournemouth are probably probably the worst team out of the ones that are there. But yeah, maybe Bournemouth. Everton is hard because they've
that would really make my season.
I feel like why?
I'm sorry, Bob, please.
Everton, you don't have the Merseyside derby.
They're just annoying. It's not for the annoying neighbours, but
I feel like they fought last season and they escaped. They could still have that in them.
I think so, but I mean, Richarlison's gone now or whatever. I mean, yeah, it's going to take a lot.
Must be nice when he was scoring goals.
That being said, obviously, that Dyche's philosophy and whatever, I feel like it could genuinely come in clutch.
I feel like a lot
of
these teams shouldn't be in this situation.
That's what I'm saying.
I think that's what makes it so close.
And also, the Premier League is really tough. It is not an easy league at all, especially with like the quality of some of the mid-table teams. So, it's just unfortunate, but I think most of the teams that go down this season, they might come back next season. So
you're right, because it's not like there's a Norwich in the league where they were clearly the worst team.
Yeah,
you're right. Every single team has still got individual quality who are kind of, and I think this is why some, you know, these teams are just picking up results because they've got individual quality to do that. So. But I think it's always hard because if you're a Leicester and you go down,
we say, oh, they'll come back up. But like players like Harvey Barnes, James Maddison, they're not going to play in the Championship.
Yeah.
So actually, then if you have to, if you have to sell your best players, then it's really difficult in terms of trying to bring in, you know, the right people. But then Burnley are showing this season that it can be done. It's entertaining, so it's good to watch. Obviously,
Very good to watch.
To Marva and for the people going through it with the emotions.
It's going to be a really good end to the season because everyone is just
the last day.
Everyone's fighting for something.
There's
no one that's not fighting for anything. I feel like everyone's in something.
Yeah,
it's going to be good.
It's going to be great. But we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. Please don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Don't be surprised if I ask what a bag is.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.